Good afternoon. Welcome to our study. It's actually evening here. Ward Green with you again. This is February 15th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 2033 hours Eastern Standard Time. The study is once again, we're at the final paragraph now of the Arabian Tradition inset in Chapter 6 of the C-Cubed article, Crucible of Credible Creed. And we're doing Daniel Chapter 6 today. Let me turn this off. Hang on a second. It's noisy. We're doing also 1 Chronicles 5, Jehovah willing. The conclusion in the Arabian insert is that with some minor adjustments, there is a most blessed alignment between the Arab tradition and the chronology we call the Blessed Genealogy. And both at the time of Moses as a baby and the Exodus. In the crucible, then, is the Arabian tradition now forged, meaning that we've seen the Arabian tradition is well fitted to our chronology that we call the Blessed Genealogy, both at the time of Moses as a baby and at the Exodus, but even more than that, even at the time of Joseph, because we saw in the second paragraph under the Exodus heading that part of the Arabian tradition is that the Egyptian king of the time of Joseph, named Ryan, is said to have flourished 400 years before the day of Moses, which is consistent with our timeline. 1923 was the appointment of Joseph. BCE 1923, Joseph was appointed second in command of Egypt in our chronology that we call the genealogy. So 400 years after that would be 1523, which is the time of Amenhotep the first. And that was just after Moses, some maybe 8 years or so after Moses had departed for Midian. And, or so we believe anyway, that he departed for Midian around 1532 BCE. So that was the time of Moses, certainly, after 400 years, as we just explained. That's all for today's study. And tomorrow we will, Jehovah willing, continue with the next paragraph in Chapter 6, which is Chapter 6, Paragraph 7 of the Crucible article. For today, we have today's proverb, Little Children, from Ecclesiastes 4 and 15. And this was just selected. When I say randomly, I mean I don't consciously do it. It's perhaps my subconscious is selecting these, but I just let my eye wander to a certain, or I just find out what my eye looks at first. And this is the, after I looked at the first, my eye came to, or I open a hardcover book. If I do it, sometimes I use a hardcover book. I just opened to the first place I can open to in that book of the Bible, and whatever place I open to, it's then I let my eyes find the first place that my eyes want to go to on that page, and I found this, Ecclesiastes 4 and 15. I have seen all those alive who are walking about under the sun. And this was the first verse my eyes came to. How it goes with the child who is second, that stands up in the other's place. And the idea there is that we see continually, you know, people being replaced by other people. And we see that in many ways happening all around us, that someone stands up in the place of another person because the other person perhaps dies or, you know, changes their place of residence or whatever reason, or, you know, there are many reasons why that could happen. But when the person comes afterwards and stands up in the other person's place, it's not, you know, it explains it in verse 16, but it's not really, in a way, it's not that exciting, I guess we could say, when someone replaces someone else. For example, we see it in political offices. People replace others as the president or prime minister, you know, and we see it as it's rather, you know, it's sometimes it can be very refreshing, there's no doubt, but it's also a little bit, you know, it makes us wonder what happened to the first person, or, you know, all this kind of thing. And it's not as impressive as the first person was, usually. I mean, that's just, there are exceptions, definitely, but that's a very interesting proverb, is it not? Little ones, let's go to our reading from 1 Chronicles chapter 5, I believe it is. Let's check and see whether that's right. Looks right, okay. But the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, and this is going to be another list of names again. We'll just read through it. But for Reuben's profaning the lounge of his father, his right as firstborn was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that he was not to be enrolled genealogically for the right of the firstborn. For Judah himself proved to be superior among his brothers, and the one for leader was from him, the Messiah, for example. I mean, that's what that means. But the right as firstborn was Joseph's. The sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, were Hanok and Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Joel were Shemaiah his son, Gog his son, Shimei his son, Micah his son, Renaiah his son, Baal his son, Beera his son, whom Tiglath-Pileser, as he's also known, the king of Assyria, took into exile, he being a chieftain, that is Beera, a chieftain of the Reubenites, and his brothers by their families in the genealogical enrollment by their descendants were, as the head, Jeiel and Zechariah, and Bela the son of Azaz, the son of Shema, the son of Joel. He was dwelling in Aroer, and as far as Nebo and Baal-meon, even to the east he dwelt, as far as where one enters the wilderness at the river Euphrates, for their livestock itself had become numerous in the land of Gilead. They spread out. And in the days of Saul, verse 10, that'd be King Saul, they made war upon the Hagrites, who came to fall by their hand, and so they dwelt in their tents throughout all the country east of Gilead. It sounds like the Hagrites were dwelling east of Gilead. As for the sons of Gad, in front of them, they dwelt in the land of Bashan. Oh no, they dwelt in their tents could mean that the Reubenites who conquered the Hagrites dwelt in the tents of the Hagrites east of Gilead, which is possible. As for the sons of Gad in front of them, they dwelt in the land of Bashan, as far as Salica. Joel was the head, and Shepham the second, and Janai, and Shaphat in Bashan. And their brothers belonging to the house of their forefathers were Michael and Meshullam, or Micael, we could say, and Meshullam, and Sheba, and Jorah, and Jachin, and Ziah, and Eber, seven. These were the sons of Abihail, the son of Huri, the son of Jeroah, the son of Gilead, the son of Michael, or Mi, sorry, Michael, the son of Jeshishe, the son of Jado, the son of Buz, Ahi, the son of Abdiel, the son of Guni, head of the house of their forefathers. And they continued to dwell in Gilead, in Bashan, and in its dependent towns, and in all the pasture grounds of Sharon, as far as their terminations. They were all of them enrolled genealogically in the days of Jotham, the king of Judah, in the days of Jeroboam, the king of Israel. Probably Jeroboam the second. The one, yeah, and that's what the footnote says there too. Okay, so he was the king of Israel as a descendant of Jehu, I believe. Now we have, let's see, these ones that continued would be from verse 11, the sons of Gad, right? And they continued to dwell in Gilead and Bashan and in its dependent towns and so on. Verse 18, as for the sons of Reuben and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, of those who were valiant fellows, men carrying shield and sword and bending the bow and trained in war, there were 44,760 going out to the army. And they began to make war upon the Hagrites and Jeter and Naphish and Nodab. And they came to be helped against them, so that the Hagrites and all those who were with them were given into their hand. For it was to God that they called for aid in the war, and he let himself be entreated in their favor, because they had trusted in him. And they got to take captive their livestock, their camels 50,000, and sheep 250,000, and asses 2,000, and human souls 100,000. For there were many that had fallen slain, because it was on the part of the true God that the fighting was. And they continued to dwell in their place down to the time of the exile. These are the Reubenites, or the sons of Reuben and the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, of the Manassites, from verse 18. As for the sons of the half-tribe of Manasseh, verse 23, they dwelt in the land from Bashan to Baal Hermon and Senir and Mount Hermon. They themselves became numerous. And these were the heads of the house of their forefathers, Epher and Ishi and Eliel and Azrael and Jeremiah and Hodaviah and Jodiel, men that were valiant, mighty fellows, men of fame, heads of the house of their forefathers. And they began to act unfaithfully toward the God of their forefathers, and went having immoral intercourse with the gods of the peoples of the land, with the gods of the peoples of the land. It's bad, having intercourse with those gods, or in other words, having dealings with those gods, or worshipping those gods, whom Jehovah had annihilated from before them. These peoples whom God had annihilated from before them when they entered the promised land. Verse 26, now, consequently, the God of Israel, and this is the last verse of the chapter, the God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, the king of Assyria, even the spirit of Tilgath-Pilneser, the king of Assyria, who's also called Tiglath-Pileser, by modern scholars, so that he took into exile those of the Reubenites and the Gadites and of the half-tribe of Manasseh, that is, Tiglath-Pileser took into exile the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and brought them to Halah and Habor and Hara and the river Gozan to continue until this day. So that's interesting, because we don't often hear about that particular exile of the sons of Israel, the sons of Judah being Judah and Benjamin only. So these would be the sons of Israel in the 10-tribe kingdom. And Tiglath-Pileser ruled from about 745 BCE, from what we know. And he's called Pul, but that's just because Pul is the name of any king of Assyria. Any king of Assyria has the name Pul. That's their title for a king. Their kingly title is Pul. So it's from this, it's also in their names, Pil and Pul. Pilezer or Pilneser, that has the name Pul in it. So, and all of the Assyrian kings had this title of Pul. So it doesn't identify him uniquely to say Pul. But it could also mean that there was a king reigning prior to Tiglath-Pileser whose spirit was stirred up, whose name was Pul, in fact, or whose title was Pul and didn't have a different, longer name than that. Because it seems to say that here that it's possible, that is, that Pul was the same person as Tiglath-Pileser, or Tilgath-Pilneser, but it doesn't absolutely require that. That interpretation is just one interpretation. We're going to research, we continually research the Bible. I find it fascinating because we know that from history there appears to have been a king before Tiglath-Pileser who was called Pul, who reigned for 46 years. And he's talked about also by Mr. Jules Oppert in that article, that publication that we translated of his called La Chronologie fixée par les Eclipses Cuneiformes, or Biblical Chronology Fixed by Cuneiform Eclipses, which I translated into English as far as the English version goes. Now, we have our reading before we run out of time. Our reading from Daniel. We didn't finish Daniel 5 yesterday, so maybe we'll read chapter 6 and see how much time we have left. Daniel 6, it's after Darius took the kingdom. We know how he took the kingdom. We know how Cyrus conquered Babylon. That's talked about in the Insight book under Cyrus. But it seemed good to Darius, who was appointed by Cyrus. And Darius set up over the kingdom, Daniel 6 and 1, 120 satraps who were to be over the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, and there had been three before too, with four of them actually. Daniel was one before with his three Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those three fellow Jews had been appointed along with Daniel prior to this. But now there were three high officials of whom Daniel was one, in order that these satraps might continually be giving to them, that is the king and his associates, that they would continually be giving to them the report, and the king himself might not become the loser. The king was at this point Darius the Mede, as we read at the end of chapter 5. So the new king had taken over. Then it was that this Daniel was steadily distinguishing himself, and Daniel's writing this. Of course, this is the book of Daniel. Chapter 6, verse 3, Daniel was steadily distinguishing himself over the high officials and the satraps. Daniel was distinguishing himself over the high officials and the satraps, for as much as an extraordinary spirit was in him, and the king was intending to elevate him over all the kingdom. The king wanted to appoint Daniel over all the kingdom. At that time, verse 4, the high officials and the satraps themselves were constantly seeking to find some pretext against Daniel respecting the kingdom. But there was no pretext or corrupt thing at all that they were able to find. For as much as he was trustworthy, and no negligence or corrupt thing at all was found in him. Consequently, these able-bodied men, verse 5, were saying, we shall find in this Daniel no pretext at all, except we have to find it against him in the law of his God. Verse 6. Accordingly, these high officials and satraps themselves entered as a throng to the king, and this is what they were saying to him. O Darius, the king, live on even for times indefinite. All the high officials of the kingdom, verse 7, the prefects and the satraps, the high royal officers and the governors have taken counsel together to establish a royal statute and to enforce an interdict that whoever makes a petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, should be thrown to the lion's pit. Now, O king, may you establish the statute and sign the writing, in order for it not to be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which is not annulled. In accord with this, King Darius himself signed the writing and the interdict. But Daniel, as soon as he knew that the writing had been signed, entered into his house, and the windows in his roof chamber being open for him toward Jerusalem, even 3 times in a day he was kneeling on his knees and praying and offering praise before his God, as he had been regularly doing prior to this. At that time, these able-bodied men themselves crowded in and found Daniel petitioning and imploring favor before his God. Then it was that they approached and were saying before the king concerning the interdict of the king, is there not an interdict that you have signed? I'm not sure if you pronounce it interdict. Is it interdite? No. But the word indict is spelt like that, with a D-I-C-T. I don't know how you pronounce interdict, actually. Let's look it up. Let's just, if we have time, look this up. Where's our dictionary? There it is. Okay. Interdict. Interdict. That sounds right. That looks right. Okay. Is there not an interdict, they said to the king, verse 12, that you have signed that any man that asks a petition, that any man that asks a petition from any god or man for 30 days except from you, O king, he should be thrown to the lion's pit. The king was answering and saying, the matter is well established according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which is not annulled. In other words, they didn't allow, they didn't allow, once the king signed an interdict, they did not allow it to be changed. That's what they mean when they say, which is not annulled. Verse 13, immediately they answered, and they were saying before the king, Daniel, who is of the exiles of Judah, has paid no regard to you, O king, nor to the interdict that you signed, but 3 times in a day he is making his petition. Daniel, who is of the exiles of Judah. Consequently, verse 14, the king, as soon as he heard the word, it was very displeasing to him, and toward Daniel he set his mind, in order to rescue him, until the setting of the sun he kept on striving to deliver him. Finally, these able-bodied men themselves entered as a throng to the king, and they were saying to the king, take note, O king, that the law belonging to the Medes and the Persians is that any interdict or statute that the king himself establishes is not to be changed. Verse 16, accordingly the king himself commanded, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the pit of the lions. The king was answering and saying to Daniel, your God whom you are serving with constancy, he himself will rescue you. So they threw Daniel into the lion's pit. And the king promised Daniel, he reassured Daniel that Jehovah would rescue him. He didn't know much about Jehovah probably, but a stone was brought and placed on the mouth of the pit, and the king sealed it with his signet ring and with the signet ring of his grandees. In order that nothing should be changed in the case of Daniel. They sealed the tomb, maybe with wax or something like that. At that time the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musical instruments were brought in before him, and his very sleep fled from him. Finally, the king himself at dawn proceeded to get up in the daylight, And in a hurry, he went right to the lion's pit. And as he got near to the pit, he cried out with a sad voice, even to Daniel. The king was speaking up and saying to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you are serving with constancy, been able to rescue you from the lions? Immediately Daniel himself spoke even with the king. O king, live on, even to times indefinite. My own God sent his angel and shut the mouth of the lions, and they have not brought me to ruin, for as much as before him, innocence itself was found in me, and also before you, O king, no hurtful act have I done. Then it was that the king himself became very glad, and Daniel himself he commanded to be lifted up out of the pit. And Daniel was lifted up out of the pit, and there was no hurt at all found on him, because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and they brought these able-bodied men who had accused Daniel, and into the lion's pit they threw them, their sons and their wives. Seems a little extreme, doesn't it? And they had not reached the bottom of the pit before the lions had got the mastery over them, and all their bones they crushed. Then it was that Darius the king himself wrote to all the peoples, the national groups, and the tongues that are dwelling in all the earth, quote, May your peace grow very much. From before me there has been put through an order that in every dominion of my kingdom people are to be quaking and fearing before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and one enduring to times indefinite, and his kingdom is one that will not be brought to ruin, and his dominion is forever. He is rescuing and delivering and performing signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth, for he has rescued Daniel from the paw of the lions. End quote. And as for this Daniel, he prospered in the kingdom of Darius and in the kingdom of Cyrus the Persian. Of course, this was the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, and Cyrus was the king over all of it at this time. And you notice how Daniel refers to himself as this Daniel, showing that he himself wrote this book, as it would appear to imply also. So that's the end of our reading. We've got six more minutes. Let's look at Daniel 5, which we didn't have time for yesterday. So right. In verse 16, the king Belshazzar had said to Daniel, And I myself have heard concerning you that you are able to furnish interpretations and to untie knots themselves. This is just before the kingdom was overthrown by Cyrus. Now, if you are able to read the writing and to make known to me its very interpretation, with purple you will be clothed, and with a necklace of gold around your neck, and as the third one in the kingdom, you will rule. At that time Daniel was answering and saying before the king, Let your gifts prove to be to you yourself, and your presents do you give to others. However, I shall read the writing itself to the king, and the interpretation I shall make known to him. As for you, O king, the Most High God himself gave to Nebuchadnezzar your father. Yeah, and Belshazzar was the son of Nabonidus. He wasn't the son of Nebuchadnezzar, so he was a descendant, it would appear, of Nebuchadnezzar, perhaps grandson or something like that. The Most High God himself, Daniel said, gave to Nebuchadnezzar your father the kingdom and the greatness and the dignity and the majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, that is to Nebuchadnezzar, all peoples, national groups, and languages proved to be quaking and showing fear before him. Whom he happened to want to, he was killing, and whom he happened to want to, he was striking. And by the way, he doesn't have to be a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar for him to be called the son of Nebuchadnezzar, or for Nebuchadnezzar to be called his father. He merely has to be the successor of him, of Nebuchadnezzar, for him to be called the son, or for Nebuchadnezzar to be called his father. He's a father in the sense of being his predecessor also. But because of the greatness that God gave Nebuchadnezzar, all peoples, national groups, and languages proved to be quaking and showing fear before him. Whom he happened to want to, he was killing, and whom he happened to want to, he was striking, and whom he happened to want to, he was exalting, and whom he happened to want to, he was humiliating. But when his heart became haughty and his own spirit became hard, so as to act presumptuously, he was brought down from the throne of his kingdom, and his own dignity was taken away from him and from the sons of mankind. And we saw this earlier in chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar was driven away, and his very heart was made like that of a beast, and with the wild asses his dwelling was. Vegetation they would give him to eat just like bulls, and with the dew of the heavens his own body got to be wet, until he knew that the Most High God is ruler in the kingdom of mankind, and that the one whom he wants to he sets up over it. His own body got to be wet. He was living out in the wild. Verse 22, and as for you, his son Belshazzar, Daniel continues, you have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this, but against the Lord of the heavens you exalted yourself, and they brought before you even the vessels of his house, meaning Jehovah's temple, the vessels that were captured by Nebuchadnezzar have been brought in by Belshazzar. And you yourself and your grandees, your concubines, and your secondary wives have been drinking wine from them, and you have praised mere gods of silver and of gold, copper, iron, wood, and stone, that are beholding nothing, or hearing nothing, or knowing nothing. But the God in whose hand your breath is, and to whom all your ways belong, you have not glorified. Consequently, from before him there was being sent the back of a hand, and this very writing was inscribed, and this is the writing that was inscribed, Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parson. This is the interpretation of the word, Mene. God has numbered the days of your kingdom and has finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and have been found deficient. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. At that time Belshazzar commanded, and they clothed Daniel with purple and with a necklace of gold about his neck, and they heralded concerning him that he was to become the third ruler in the kingdom. In that very night Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was killed, and Darius the Mede himself received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And it's very interesting to read how Cyrus actually conquered the city, which Belshazzar and all of his grandees believed to be impregnable. They did an interesting thing with the way the walls of the city were, so that the river flowed through part of the walls of the city, and they were able to somehow, as explained in the Insight book, they were able to penetrate the city by an ingenious method, or at least certainly they outwitted outwitted the Babylonians. The Medes and the Persians outwitted the Babylonians, Cyrus the Persian being the king. Now that's all we have for today. It's February 15th, 2024 of the Common Era. It's 2106 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. It's been great to be with you. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.